From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you very much. How are you doing, by the way? Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show begins right now.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Do drop me a line on Twitter, the usual Twitter handle. I'm under at Richie Allen Show. And, well, I expect to hear from you today of all days. I expect to be bombarded with tweets. So get tweeting. Tweet the bejesus out of me. Let's crack on with it. Alrighty. Yes, 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 yes. Right, move on. I was due to have a guest today. Angelo John Gage was due to be on. Angelo isn't feeling very well, sadly. We will reschedule that. But it's probably, it's not a good thing he's not feeling well. Of course not. But it's a good thing we're going to reschedule because, well, it's been a pretty crazy day and there's so much that we need to talk about, dear listener. Get tweeting me. I look forward to reading your tweets as we go on. We shall jab them in the hospital. We'll jab them in the supermarkets. We'll jab them in the car parks. Jab them in the workplace. We'll jab them in the butchers. We shall jab them in the bakers, the candlestick makers. We'll jab them in the buttocks. And we'll jab them in the Botox. We'll never surrender. From this day forward, let December 8th be known as V-Day! V-Day! And the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, was moved to tears on Good Morning Britain today. He was crying.
You're quite emotional by that.
Well, it's just, it's been such a tough year for so many people, and there's William Shakespeare putting it so simply for everybody that, you know, we can get on with our lives. And you know, there's still a few months to go. I've still got this worry that we can't blow it now, Piers. We've still got to get the vaccine to millions of people, and so we've got to keep sticking by the rules. But it's just, you know, there's so much work gone into this, and I'm really, really, it makes you proud to be British.
Proud to be British. We'll never surrender. Yeah, he was crying on the Piers Morgan Susanna Reid show on Good Morning Britain. He did recover very quickly. It sounded like the fakest cry I've ever heard in my life.
You're quite emotional by that.
Well, it's just, it's been such a tough year for so many people, and there's William Shakespeare putting it so simply for everybody that, you know, we can get on with our lives. And you know, there's still a few months to go. I've still got this worry that...
He laughs when he says millions.
...that we can't blow it now, Piers. We've still got to get the vaccine to millions of people.
That's funny, isn't it? That was the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, on this, the first V-Day of all time. Now, what we've witnessed today is a massive television event across every channel, very carefully planned and coordinated. Planned as much as something like Live 8, the silly drop the debt thing, or Live Aid in 1985, or the Olympics. This is incredibly well planned today. Every presenter presented live from a hospital. Every one of them presented their shows live from a hospital, breathlessly. Reporters too, live in hospitals. A great love-in for the sacred NHS on V-Day. Stage-managed, massive theatrical event this, and it began on the dot at 7 o'clock this morning. Let's go on an emotional journey, you and me, of massive manipulation, dear listener. Emotional blackmail mixed together with buckets and buckets of pathos. We're going around the houses now. Let's start at Sky News. Sarah Hewson was standing in for Kay Burley this morning. My Kay. And I found out this morning, much to my chagrin. That's what I would have said in my school days in Ireland. My chagrin. That Kay was suspended because she didn't stick to the COVID rules when she took her besties out for her 60th birthday celebrations on Saturday night in Soho. Kay is in the doghouse, so she's actually been suspended. Was it a good night though, Kay?
Fabulous.
It's all good.
She had a good night. She doesn't give a shit, the ginger ninja. So Sarah Houston stepped in. Listen to the language used on all of the clips today. Yes. Light them on the beaches. Fill your boots.
Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on an historic day. In the last few minutes, the world has taken this huge step towards beating the thing that's defined our lives for the last year, the coronavirus. This is patient A, and this is the moment so many of us had been hoping for, the start of the UK COVID-19 vaccine rollout and the vaccination of the first patient in the UK outside of trials.
So many of us had been waiting for, said the journalist.
Trials. 90-year-old Margaret Keenan. It happened right here at Coventry Hospital in the building behind me. And with this single jab this morning, history has been made and the UK COVID vaccine rollout is now underway.
Underway. History has been made. Margaret Keenan, 90 years old.
Well, with me now is our health correspondent, Ashish Joshi. I mean,
Ashish. His name is Ashish Joshi, but she called him Arsish on live telly.
Hard to underestimate the significance of this moment this morning, Ashish, the administration.
Listen to the language. It's hard to underestimate the significance of this moment, Arsish. This is a production. You're being told, manipulated into what you should be feeling. This is monumental. We're at war with an invisible enemy and, well, we just started fighting back.
Ashish Joshi.
Arsish.
I mean, hard to underestimate the significance of this moment this morning, Ashish, the administration of that first vaccine.
Yeah, this is one of those moments which will go down in scientific and medical history as one of the defining achievements of the last 30, 40, 50 years, to have produced a vaccine which is safe to be administered into patients like 90-year-old Margaret Keenan from Coventry in a space of just 12 months. You think, Sarah, looking back from December last year in Wuhan, the first cases identified by those Chinese scientists, to where we are now, where Margaret has received that first vaccine, that is a phenomenal scientific achievement. And it just can't be underestimated when you think about the work that's gone into this, the condensing years of work into just a few months.
Thanks, Arsish. So a UK grandmother called Margaret Keenan, who will be 91 next week, she got the first one and she said it was the best early birthday present she could imagine. She got it at 6:31 this morning, 800,000 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine will be dispensed in the coming weeks and they expect to give it to 4 million more people by the end of the month. Matt Hancock, we saw Hancock earlier on, he's given it the moniker V-Day. He said this simple act of vaccination was a tribute to the scientific endeavour and human ingenuity and to the hard work of so many people. We'll hear more from Hancock a bit later on. Over on the BBC, they wanted to deify Margaret or canonise her pre-mortem. And, well, Margaret, there'll be statues of Margaret. Nikki Campbell, Rachel Burns.
A few more details about Margaret herself. You're going to hear a lot about Margaret, I would think, over the next 24 hours.
Oh, we are.
90 years old, 91 next week, a former jewellery shop assistant. She only retired 4 years ago. She's got a daughter, a son and 4 grandchildren. She's looking forward to being able to going out once again once she receives the top-up dose. She's apparently said, I feel so privileged to be the first person vaccinated. It's the best early birthday present I could wish for because it means I can finally look forward to spending time with my family and friends in the new year after being on my own for most of the year. She then says, I can't thank May, that's the nurse and NHS staff enough who've looked after me tremendously. My advice to anyone offered the vaccine is to take it. If I can have it at 90, then you can have it too.
And then, yes, if she can have it at 90, you can have it as well.
And then loads of thanks to everyone else involved in the whole process. She's originally from Enniskillen, lived in Coventry for over 60 years.
The biography is hilarious.
And she'll then get that booster jab, Nikki, in 21 days' time.
Wow. Remember the day, Tuesday, the 8th of December. It is what they're calling,
V-Day.
Quite obviously, but appropriately,
V-Day.
V-Day. The day that the first vaccinations against COVID-19 will be given after 10 months of living under unprecedented restrictions in this country. That's not breaking news. And tragically, over 61,000 deaths from the virus. Could this be the moment that we start to turn the tide?
This will be the moment. Go on, Margaret. Let's hear from the Prime Minister. Boris Johnson was speaking. He had been speaking to an 81-year-old woman called Lynn. He'd gone to see an 81-year-old woman called Lynn who'd just had the vaccine. Let's hear the great big barrel of monkey spunk himself.
Very, very exciting just to talk to Lynn about the vaccine that she's just taken. She's 81, and really very moving to hear her say that she's doing it for Britain. And that's exactly right, because she's protecting herself, but she's also helping to protect the entire country. And across the whole of the UK this morning, that is happening in all in Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales, in England. People are having the vaccine for the first time, and it will gradually make a huge, huge difference. But I stress gradually, because, you know, we're not there yet. We haven't defeated this virus yet, and it's very important for people to understand. Sorry, it's quite hard to speak through this, but it's important for people to understand that the virus is, alas, still rising in some parts of the country. It's rising, for instance, in London. We've got it down hugely as a result of the measures we took in November, which have just come off. People made a huge, huge effort. We can't afford to relax now.
Yeah, we can't afford to relax now. Did you catch that bit in the middle? He was inhaling his mask.
Sorry, it's quite hard to speak through this.
Yeah, he was actually inhaling his mask. The clip is available on the BBC and Sky News websites. He could barely breathe, let alone speak, because of the mask on his face. Pure vaudeville.
Sorry, it's quite hard to speak through this.
Yeah. He was then asked about hesitancy, public hesitancy to take this brand new vaccine.
Well, I would just say to all those who are scared, don't be. And you've seen Lynn take it, you've seen Paul, you've seen people take the vaccine this morning in large numbers. People are going to be taking it in the next few days and weeks. And there's nothing to be nervous about. And what I would say, excuse me, sorry, get this thing on properly. What I would say is that there are those, obviously, who feel that a vaccine is something they object to politically or for ideological reasons or for medical reasons. I think they're totally wrong. I know that there are loads of people who count themselves anti-vaxxers. That's totally the wrong approach. It's safe. It's the right thing to do. It's good for you and it's good for the whole of the country.
Are you confident that the system can...
It's good for you and it's good for the whole of the country, said the Prime Minister.
Country.
Are you confident that the system can cope with this rollout?
Well, it's going to take a while. I want to stress that it will take, you know, weeks and months rather than just days to get away.
Yeah, he goes on to say we can't be relaxing the other things. We'll come back to that as well. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live in Salford, the BBG, with you for however long this lasts. I did have a guest booked in and he's cried off. I think Angelo would have come on later this afternoon. I think he said, I can probably make it, to his credit. But at that stage, having heard that he wouldn't be on, I'd prepared this. And there's a lot to get through, so I am going to be with you for some time, I do believe, this afternoon. We are going to hear some more incredibly giddy reporting and presenting on this, well, monumental, momentous V-Day. But I want to play a couple of tunes as well. Let's keep the mood fairly light. Playing this for the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. Thank you, Matt. This is for you. The great Jackie Wilson on the Richie Allen Show. Jackie Wilson, Lonely Teardrops on your Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is exactly 20 minutes past five. Now, my great friend Spiro Skouras is a terrific journalist. Has sent me some information that he got from the FDA website. Okay, this is the regulatory authority, of course, in the United States. And he's gotten hold of a paper that is dated December 10th, which is 2 days from now. It might be an early release of this particular paper. The paper is entitled Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee Meeting. December 10th, 2020. It's the FDA briefing document on the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. Why is it important? Well, I'll tell you why it's important. Because Spiro has noticed that in this document, which is fairly extensive, where it talks about side effects, it talks about deaths. And it says a total of six. Now remember, the MHRA is the regulatory body for the release of medicines in the UK, but every country will have its own regulatory agency. In the United States, it's the FDA. So it's done its own research into the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. And where it says serious adverse events, it says a total of six participants out of 43,500 died during the reporting period from April 29th to November 14th. Now, it says of the six who died, two received the vaccine, four got the placebo, is what it says. Goes on to say the placebo recipients died from myocardial infarction and hemorrhagic stroke or unknown causes. Three of the four deaths occurred in the older group, that's people over 55 years of age. All deaths represent events that occur in the general population of the age groups where they occurred. It's a very interesting bit of information. It's good work by Spiro. And you have to wonder, again, what you're not being told. That's all I'll say about that. He's putting together a report on that. You'll find it probably at activistpost.com. You'll find it certainly on his channel on BitChute and on YouTube, Spiro Skouras. Okay. Right, let's crack on. As the morning went on, this monumental day, I can honestly say, and it is something I've said before, I know that, I've never in all of my life heard anything like or witnessed anything like the conduct of so-called journalists today. They were competing for the title of the most wretched, sycophantic government mouthpiece in the world. Listen to the BBC News 24 channel. This is from around about 11 o'clock this morning. Giddy? I would have thought so.
First, our health correspondent, Catherine Burns, is at University Hospital Coventry. Catherine, it's hard not to be moved watching those pictures of the first vaccinations being administered this morning.
Do you know, Joanna, the atmosphere here today is something to... You just can't quite imagine it. There's been this steady parade of people, of hope, coming in. So mostly elderly people coming in. They look slightly nervous when they arrive and then they leave with big smiles on their face. The staff here are saying that everyone is really grateful. And obviously it all started, as we know, this morning at 6:29 when Maggie Keenan got that first injection.
Yes, so studio presenters handing, those who are in the studio, most of them were at hospitals, handing to reporters, saying, isn't it hard to express how huge, how massive this is, what an occasion. And you've got the unseen reporter saying things like, the atmosphere here is incredible, everybody's delighted, nurses and doctors with big smiles on their faces, people delighted to get the vaccine. It's astonishing to me, this. It really is. I didn't think it could get any worse. Over on Sky, Sarah Hewson, the main presenter, was at a hospital. She handed over to a reporter called Ali Fortescue in another part of the hospital so that we could hear from an elderly gentleman who had just been jabbed. Listen.
Yes, that's right. Lots of excitement here. 90-year-old George Dyer is...
Lots of excitement. 90-year-old George Dyer. Lots of excitement again.
...is the first patient here to be vaccinated for COVID-19. Let's have a quick chat to him. How are you feeling? It was about half an hour ago. Obviously, must feel pretty exciting to be one of the first people.
Oh, yes. So I'm quite happy, actually. No after effects at the moment.
And you're one of... We think you might well be the first person in London to be vaccinated for COVID-19. How did you feel this morning when you woke up knowing that?
I felt very privileged, really. You know, I know everyone's going to have the vaccine, but to be the first one is terrific, really.
And moving forward, what is it going to mean to you to... Obviously, this isn't the end of the road. We know that you've got to come in 3 weeks' time to get the booster jab, and then a week after that, the full effects will come in. Well, how do you feel about the future now?
It would be lovely because I can be released, actually, from my home, really.
I can be released.
Because I miss people. And sort of being enclosed in your home, you don't see people. Fortunately, I've got friends that telephone me, you know, so I'll keep in touch. But the mere thought of going out, sort of walking around the shops, you know, it's lovely. And I love Christmas time. I love going around the shops and listening to the music, seeing all the goodies, you know.
And you're hoping that in the new year, once you've had the booster jab, a week after that, you'll be able to hug your loved ones and your life is really going to start changing.
Yeah. So you got vaxxed today, George, and you're hoping that in 3 weeks you'll get your second jab, and a week after that you'll be able to hug your grandkids, eh?
You're going to start changing.
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm looking forward to it, really, to have my second jab so I can go out a bit. Yeah.
And how difficult has it been? That I know it's we're focusing on the positive today, but it must have been very difficult, 90 years old, obviously one of the people that's most at risk from this virus. The last few months must have been really tough. Yeah.
Well, you just get on with life, don't you? You know, I'm very fortunate that I love music, I love doing jigsaw puzzles, I like reading, you know. So I'm very, very fortunate as regards that, so that I can get on with life.
Thank you so much, George Dunn. Absolute pleasure to meet you. What an extraordinary day this is. There is a lot of excitement here, but there's also a lot of nervousness because obviously this is day one, an enormous logistical challenge. We know this is a vaccine that needs to be kept at minus 70 degrees Celsius. We're having people over the age of 80 coming in, 195 people we expect to come in here today. Keeping social distancing is going to be a real challenge as well. But above all, this does just feel like a historic moment and a really exciting day, Sarah.
Historic.
Yeah, really exciting day, Ali. Also an emotional one. I don't know about you, made me feel quite emotional listening to George there as he described how much he missed people and missed his friends. And I think those words will resonate for so many. And let us hope that this marks the beginning of the end.
Let's hope it marks the beginning of the end. It's hard not to feel emotional, said the presenter, Sarah Hewson. So you've got buckets of pathos. Buckets of pathos. Off camera, they're chucking buckets of pathos at the presenters and at you. And the media is in total lockstep. I don't think it was quite taking the spring out of the Easter Bunny step today, but it wasn't far off it at all. You heard Ali there.
But above all, this does just feel like a historic moment and a really exciting day, Sarah.
Yeah, then you had Simon on the BBC.
This is BBC News. I'm Simon McCoy. The headlines at 3. A historic day in the global fight against coronavirus.
Historic, Simon, there. And then you had Jane Secker on Sky.
90-year-old Margaret Keenan is the first person in the world to receive the Pfizer vaccine outside trials.
Outside of the trials.
Hello, this is Sky News, live from Coventry, where history has been made
history.
In the fight against COVID-19.
Oh, history. Loads of history.
Well, history has been made at Coventry Hospital, where the first Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine outside of a clinical trial has been administered.
Yeah, do you see what I meant at the very top of the show when I said this has been coordinated and carefully planned? None of this is coincidental. They've planned this for the last couple of weeks. Executives have been meeting with government officials, television executives, and radio executives have been meeting with government officials and NHS England officials to plan this massive psyop. What's been going on today is a massive psychological operation on the people of this country. You're being told how to feel, what to think, what to say. And things are being normalised for you without you even being aware of it. Now, when I say you, I know that you probably know. But many of the people you know do not know. They don't know that they are being brainwashed, that they are being absolutely hypnotised today into going along with this crazy stuff. They're all in lockstep. Talk radio, LBC, BBC Radio 2, Jeremy Vine, we'll hear from him in a minute. Lockstep, Ian Collins on Talk Radio today.
The vaccine is here. It's been wheeled out today. It's like a... To me, I just look at this and think this is such a great time to be alive for the human race, right? And I share Julia Hartley Brewer's enthusiasm for this as well, that this is just medicine and science at its very best. Something's happened. Here is a virus. Viruses will happen, by the way. Pandemics will happen every 20, 30 years, I think the stats say. And they come around with different levels of severity and different attack different elements of the human condition or the human biological system, etc. And what we can do as humans is try and fight that. And the best are on the case. And this was a global effort. And it's an amazing time, a real proud time to be a human on this planet, that we are here to kind of witness these kind of moments.
Yeah. They haven't forgotten, by the way, that they have a job to do and that they should be looking at this through narrowed eyes. Their eyelids should be turning slanty. They should be incredibly suspicious at what's happening in front of their eyes. They choose not to. For whatever reason, I can't explain because I don't know these people personally. No, they're cheerleading it and they're effectively acting as propagandists for the government, for the NHS and for the vaccine companies. Ian Collins knows that the swine flu vaccine of 2010, of 2009-2010, left many, many, many people suffering with narcolepsy. They know this. There hasn't been a mention of that anywhere today. Not a single mention. They're all in lockstep. It's almost like magic. Like magic. 28 minutes to the top of the hour. Your Richie Allen Show. Lots more to tell you. Lots of time to do it in as well. This is, of course, the Steve Miller Band and Abracadabra. Steve Miller Band and Abracadabra on the Richie Allen at Radio Show. Bit of classic 70s there, bit of classic 70s there. I think it's 70s, is it? I think it's 70s. Hi to Deborah. How you doing, Deborah? Speaking of Ian Collins, Richie, he went on to say that he would not be taking the COVID jab and had never taken the flu jab. Did he say that, Deborah? He's willing to push it but not take it himself. Shameful. I'm leaving the rest to karma. Did he really? I'm not saying you're a liar, Deborah, at all. I will go and grab the audio myself later on, because to be singing from the rooftops, to be crowing triumphantly about being proud to be British because of the jab and then saying you wouldn't take it, that's a bit strange. I want to give a shout out to my mate Kelly in County Cork, in the great County Cork. And because Kelly had a pretty nasty experience today, I am not going to do my outrageously bad Cork accent because it might push her over the edge. Kelly went into a charity shop in Cork today where she was refused entry because she wasn't wearing the right mask. She had a mask on and she's put a photograph of the mask she was wearing on Twitter. And as far as masks go, it looks all right to me, Kelly. I'm so sick of people thinking they have authority over others. The woman made a massive scene and told me to leave the shop or she would call the Gardaí. I was mortified, says Kelly. I'm sure you were mortified. You see, God be with the days now when in a situation like that, you would threaten the shopkeeper or the assistant with the local radio station. That's what we used to do years ago. Or the national radio station, whatever, depending on where you were. You see, if you were in Dublin once upon a time, if you were in Ballyoaklea once upon a time and you were screwed over by a business or you were screwed over by the electricity supply board or by anybody, you would threaten them with Jerry Ryan. You would say, I'm going on Jerry Ryan in the morning, re. I'll be on Jerry Ryan, re, in the morning, re. And you would threaten them that you would ring up Jerry Ryan and embarrass them. And in Waterford City, of course, where I come from, the late, great Billy McCarthy, great guy, that was a common refrain in Port Lauraga, a common thing. If somebody screwed you over or shortchanged you, you got bad customer service, you were left down, you would say, I'm going on Billy McCarthy in the morning. I'm ringing up Billy McCarthy. And I'm going on air and I'm going to hang you out to dry. And when I produced that programme many years later, I was deluged by people who wanted to come on the air to badmouth somebody else. That's the beauty of local radio. People would ring you up. Richie, yes, you're the producer, aren't you? I am. I want to go on with Billy. Why? Because somebody gave me a stale blah. I got cheese instead of pickle in the sandwich I got from my local sandwich maker. And when I went back, they wouldn't change it, Richie. I want to go on air. I got a telly from the ESB, Richie, and it broke down. and they're taking their time about coming to pick it up and repair it. I want to be on the air, Richie. And that's how it was. God be with the days when you could do that. But Kelly, it's not a nice thing, is it? People have gone mad, haven't they? This thing has driven people mad. The programming is strong with so many people. We'll be back with plenty more. We will hear from the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, asking you, not what you can do, no, asking you to consider not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. We'll hear that in a minute, sadly.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Did you ever do that? No. I mean, local radio is not a uniquely Irish thing. Did you ever do that? Threaten somebody that you go on the radio and embarrass them? Right. Yes, I've got some interesting news for you now that you might be interested in. The Sunday before last, I was moved at the very last minute to do a one-off Sunday morning Melodies radio show where I played a few tunes for a couple of hours, had a few laughs, you participated, and it was good fun. And because I enjoyed it that much, I've decided to do it again, wait for it, on Christmas morning. Yes, on Christmas morning at 10 o'clock. That is 10 o'clock UK time, obviously. So at 10 o'clock, between 10 and midday this Christmas morning, I'll be joining you. I've cleared this with the oft-mentioned Caroline, her from Nancy in France, the oft-mentioned future Mrs. Anne. I've said, look, do you mind if I do it? No, not at all. I'll enjoy listening to it, she said. So Christmas morning, 10 o'clock to midday. Why am I doing it? You're putting a lot on yourself. Are you putting a lot on yourself, Baldy? I'll have a good 9 days off over the Christmas anyway, as I do every year because of the way it works out. For example, I will finish up on December 23rd, which will be a Wednesday. I'll be off on Christmas Eve. I'll be with you on Christmas morning, which is Friday the 25th, for a couple of hours. And then I won't be back then until Monday, the 4th of January. So I'll have a nice bit of time off to relax and recuperate and get myself back together. But Christmas morning, between 10 and midday, we'll have some fun, you and I. Back to Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary. He was speaking in Parliament around lunchtime. Stadiums will be used to roll out all of the vaccines, including those that have yet to be approved. Here he is, Hancock.
And as more vaccines come on stream in the new year, we'll open vaccination centres in larger venues like sports stadia and conference halls. Mr. Speaker, people do not need to apply. The NHS will get in touch at the appropriate time. And when that time's come, we have one clear request. Please step forward for your country. I want to thank all those involved, the international team of scientists, the globally respected regulator, the MHRA, Public Health England, the Vaccines Task Force, and all the volunteers who took part in the trial, and all those who have come forward for vaccinations so far, and all those who will do so in the future. Months of trials involving thousands of people have shown that this vaccine works and is safe, and by coming forward, you're taking the best possible step to protect yourself, your loved ones, and protect the NHS.
You caught that bit in the middle, didn't you? You caught that bit in the middle.
The NHS will get in touch at the appropriate time. And when that time's come, we have one clear request. Please step forward for your country.
Step forward for your country. Have the vaccine to protect yourself and those you live with, but more importantly, to protect the country. This, again, it's astounding. This is going unchallenged. And the problem with that is it is basically seeping into the subconscious of the nation. The collective subconscious of the nation is buying this stuff now because it's going unchallenged. By the way, Andy Foley is listening. How you doing, Andy? Richie says, Ed Doolin, sounds Irish, Ed Doolin on Radio WM in Birmingham was the best. Authorities were terrified of him. That's Andy and Paula, who are in Bourneville. How you doing, Andy and Paula? Thanks for listening. And thanks for your tweet. I really appreciate that. Hi to David Stanford. Now, let's move swiftly on. Yes, do you like that? In case, by the way, you came late to the programme, as Charlotte has told us, there in Burnley, listen to Matt Hancock pretending to be in tears, overcome with emotion and joy, as the vaccine rollout began today. Listen to this garbage.
You're quite emotional about that.
Well, it's just, it's been, you know, it's been such a tough year for so many people. And there's William Shakespeare putting it so simply for everybody that, you know, we can get on with our lives. And you know, there's still a few months to go.
He recovered very quickly. You wouldn't even give him a raspberry for that. You wouldn't give him a raspberry for that garbage, for that performance, aren't you? It's worth listening to again.
You're quite emotional about that.
Well, it's just, it's been, you know, it's been such a tough year for so many people. And there's William Shakespeare putting it so simply for everybody that, you know, we can...
Yeah, voodoo is the answer. I said this yesterday. Try and get a lock of his hair. Let's do some voodoo. So what about these new vaccines then? Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine that is awaiting approval. There is some news on that. Before we get the news on it, the managing director of NHS England is a guy called Stephen Powis. He was asked about this by BBC Radio's Rachel Burden. When will we get some new vaccines? Here's Rachel Burden and Stephen Powis.
And just finally, do you think that we're going to get any of the other vaccines actually out and being given to people before Christmas? And I know that's a really difficult question to answer, but are you hopeful that, for example, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine will be available to the NHS before Christmas?
Well, of course I'm hopeful. I'm full of hope today. It's one of those days where you just have to be full of hope. So we know the AstraZeneca vaccine is going through review by the independent regulator, the MHRA. They have done a great job with the Pfizer vaccine. They will do a similarly great job, I'm sure, with the AstraZeneca vaccine. They look at these things very, very carefully, as they always do with all medicines and all vaccines, to make sure they work, to make sure that they're safe. We need to let them get on with that. But of course, we remain hopeful that they will complete that process soon, and we will have access to a second vaccine.
Yes. Now, it was reported late this afternoon that the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID vaccine, which they were just discussing there, has been given the seal of approval by the Lancet Journal. So it's one step closer to being approved by the MHRA. I'll read you very quickly the BBC story. The Oxford AstraZeneca COVID vaccine is safe and effective, giving good protection, researchers have confirmed in the Lancet Journal. Most in the study were younger than 55, but the results so far indicate it does work well in older people as well. The data also suggests it can reduce the spread of COVID as well as protect against illness and death. The paper, assessed by independent scientists, sets out full results from advanced trials of over 20,000 people. The regulators, who will have seen the same data, are considering the jab for emergency use. So the MHRA will probably, what is it today, Tuesday? It is Tuesday. Sometime this week, maybe even tomorrow, the MHRA will say, we are giving the go-ahead for the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine to be used, and then the fun will really start. All right. The Richie Allen Radio Show. That's what you're listening to. Why do you tell us that? We know. Well, it's all about branding and stuff, isn't it? Just reminding you, you know. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. My great friend Jean Ann is doing a bit better than she was yesterday. All of those healing vibes you send out. Love this. The Tracks of My Tears. First heard this song in the film Platoon back in the mid-80s. Back with you with more news in a few moments. Baby, take a good look at Smokey Robinson and the Miracles and tracks of My Tears. Great tune, eh? What a tune that is. Natalie Stacey, my mate, your mate. How you doing, Natalie? She says, Richie, that's stunt. She didn't say stunt, but I can't say what she said on the radio. That stunt is laughing, she said. He was pretending to be crying, and I don't think he expected that Piers Morgan would pick him up on it.
You're quite emotional about that.
Well, it's just, it's been, you know, it's been such a tough year for so many people, and there's William Shakespeare putting it so simply for everybody that...
What a backstard, eh? What a fuppin' backstard. A fuppin' backstard is what he is. Stuart, by the way, weighed in on Ed Doolin. How you doing, Stuart? Stuart said he wants to echo the comments about Ed Doolin being a very good and a very helpful radio presenter. If you called in that show when you needed help, you would get it. He helped my stepdad out back in the late 1980s, said Stuart there. We heard earlier from Andy and Paula in Bourneville. And I mentioned Billy McCarthy, who trained me. And I like to think he did a half-decent job of it. A wonderful presenter who's not with us anymore. He passed away about 2.5 years ago. Billy was great too. He was a radio presenter who began presenting in the 80s and then in the late 1980s when the pirate stations got their licenses in the late 1980s. Billy had a mid-morning show. And if anybody was screwing you over, local government, as I said, if it was a consumer affairs issue, you rang in Billy. And most often, usually, you would get some help because they didn't want to be embarrassed on the radio, these people. Billy was brilliant. And like I mentioned, it would have been the same in Dublin, no matter where you were. I'll ring up Jerry Ryan, I'm telling you. And that's a wonderful thing. We don't have it anymore. Why do we not have it anymore? Because local radio stations were swallowed up by conglomerates, by massive corporations. And that's the way it is. The way of the world. 7.5 minutes to 6 o'clock. BBG, on his Todd, on my lonesome, with you for however long this lasts. By my watch, it'll be about 6:30. Not too shabby. Was due to have Angelo on today. I'm looking forward to speaking with Angelo. Angelo, when I announced he might be coming on, I've had a few emails from people asking me not to interview him. Don't bring him on, Richie. Because he's very controversial. But that's all the more reason to bring him on. Now, speaking of controversial, the great Hayden Hewitt has invited me to speak to him on the big show on Trigger Warning this Thursday at 9 o'clock. I'll be there with bells on. I will do this programme, of course, 7 o'clock, 5 to 7, and then I'll be taking a drive into Cheetham Hill where I'll be spending an hour with Hayden Hewitt. He's invited me. He's done a series of live shows recently with people that he's interested in. And they've been very, very good shows. Count Dankula has been on. The Emma Kenny, the psychotherapist, has been on, to name two. And he's very good at that. So he's invited me. YouTube.com/Trigger Warning TV. YouTube.com/Trigger Warning TV. I would ask you to subscribe to that anyway. I know Hayden winds some of you up because he doesn't see the world quite through the same prism you see it. Or even I see it. But who cares? He's a top lad and he's a great champion of free speech. One of the greatest champions of free speech in this country, in my very humble opinion. Let's just move on. Big ignorant poly bastard. I said Jeremy Vine, didn't I? A few minutes ago, Jeremy Vine, BBC Radio 2, he had Bharat Pankhania on. Now, Bharat Pankhania is a professor at the University of Exeter. And not an Ivy League university, but who cares? Vine wanted to know, are we there now where we can get rid of the masks and get together again? Are we? Listen to this very interesting answer. You might hear the question first, actually.
Are we at a point there when, let's say, take an example of somebody who has the vaccine today and then their second jab is in 3 weeks and then they're told a week later that's basically they're protected if you know, their body works that way. Can they just then take their mask off and circulate as normal again?
No, that's a really good, important question you ask for the benefit of our listeners.
The shortest possible answer is no. So protection against SARS-CoV-2 is multi-layered. So the multi-layered is you wear your mask, you keep your social distancing, you avoid crowds, you avoid unventilated places, and the immunization is a good armament, a good extra layer of protection. Now then, once we've immunized many, many people and followed them up, we will have a pretty good idea about how many of those infection control measures we can slowly start to drop. But now is not the time to drop those infection control measures.
So it sounds to me like we're wearing masks for most of 2021.
Well,
probably, and it may also be a cultural change whereby whenever anyone has a flu-like, cold-like illness, they wear a mask to protect them, protect other people, like they do in the Far East. And it is not a bad thing to not spread your infections if you are infected with anything.
Thank you so much. What a lot of wisdom there. Really helped us. Thank you. Dr. Bharat Pankhania, who's a senior clinical lecturer at Exeter College of Medicine and knows a lot about communicable diseases and pandemics, has worked on Ebola and SARS. What a fascinating gentleman. Thank you.
Yeah. Pull your tongue out of his arse, Jeremy. Hey, listen, did you catch that bit?
It may also be a cultural change whereby whenever anyone has a flu-like, cold-like illness, they wear a mask to protect them, protect other people, like they do in the Far East. And it is not a bad thing to not spread your infections if you are infected with anything.
Cultural change, eh? There might be a cultural change after all of this, said Bharat Pankhania, but of course that's planned. That's a part of it, isn't it? He said that you probably might want to wear a mask in the future, whatever infection you have, to prevent you spreading your dirty, rotten germs and potentially infecting somebody else. You might have a cold. You might have cough due to cold. Very American, isn't it, that? That's entered the lexicon here. I've seen that on advertisements a lot lately. Cough due to cold. First time I ever heard that was Forrest Gump asking somebody, what's wrong with you? Have you got cough due to cold? I think he was asking Jenny. When Jenny had AIDS, Dirty Jenny, after she left him, went shagging. And she wasn't well. And he said, have you got cough due to cold? So this is what's happening. And it's happening at the speed of light. Change the way we move, think, walk, talk, work, socialise. And the last line of defence, and I know we keep harping on about this, the last line of defence is the guy who gets access to Bharat Pankhania. You see, leave arrogance and leave bragging and all of that to one side. I'm a vastly superior radio broadcaster than Jeremy Vine. I'm well aware of that. Vastly superior in every aspect of broadcasting and producing. But I don't get to speak to Bharat Pankhania. He won't speak to me. I've invited every one of these people to come and speak on this radio programme, and they won't speak lest they be criticised by so-called anti-racism groups for coming on. Not because I'm a racist, but because I've allegedly interviewed racists in the past. So because I can't get a hold of Bharat Pankhania and rip him to pieces, tear him a new arsehole, which is what I would do. The last line of defence is Jeremy Vine. And you heard Jeremy Vine's arse-licking exit from that interview there. You're wonderful. Thanks for all that wonderful information. Oh, you're amazing. Oh, you're fantastic, Professor. As the Professor said, you know, the new normal. The new normal. The new normal. The new normal. It's coming up for the top of the hour. We might have another tune, will we? No? Not yet. Not yet. We'll move on. We won't have a tune just yet. Speaking about new normal and things like, for example, you being precluded from accessing certain services or going to certain places if you didn't get yourself vaccinated. This came up on Radio 5 Live with Nicky Campbell today. He interviewed Rebecca Brown from Oxford University's Centre for Ethics in Medicine. Rebecca Brown, another one of the academic brigade being rolled out all the time. She's on regularly. So on mandating vaccines, on incentivizing vaccines. Here is Rebecca Brown, as I said, Radio 5 Live this morning.
So there will be some people who don't get vaccinated, and perhaps they can't be vaccinated for some reason, or they're unwilling to do so. And that means that they will still be at risk of the virus themselves, and they would still be a risk to other people of spreading the virus to them. So I think whilst they would be put at a disadvantage if there were still kind of lockdown style restrictions in place, or some restriction on people's movement, if they're not immune, then there's a good reason for that. And the reason is that they continue to be a threat to other people's health. And so whilst they would be worse off, they would be disadvantaged, I think in this situation, it would actually be justifiable to kind of continue to ask them to distance themselves from others in order to protect other people. But hopefully this wouldn't be a situation that continues for too much longer if we can vaccinate people swiftly and it's effective.
If somebody says, I'm not going to take this vaccine because I'm making a stance against what has happened to animals on the way through for the research purposes, that has to be respected, doesn't it?
Well, it's certainly up to people whether or not they want to get vaccinated. And people will have all sorts of reasons for doing so or avoiding doing so. And some will be more reasonable than others, I think. There's discussion of different kinds of policies around vaccination. So I have colleagues who've worked on questions around whether vaccination should be mandatory, whether there should be certain advantages that come along with it, whether we should incentivize vaccination in particular ways. But at the end of the day, it's not going to be forced. People aren't going to be, forced to undergo vaccination. It will be their own choice. So they can refuse to do so if they don't want to, but there may well be costs associated with that. So it's up to people whether they choose to do so.
There may well be costs. And she spoke about her colleagues working on mandating vaccines and how that could be done. Costs and punishments. That's where coercion, of course, comes in. It's the coercion element of it, isn't it? It's exactly 2:30 past six. Let's get headlines from FSN before we move on. There's still a bit to get through, thankfully. Headlines from FSN. What's going on? Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah. Press the wrong button again. Headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. History has been made in Britain, where 90-year-old Maggie Keenan has become the first person ever to receive a clinically approved COVID-19 vaccine. In the US, President Trump is hosting a vaccine summit at the White House, but neither Pfizer nor Moderna were willing to attend it. And President-elect Joe Biden has made his pick for Defense Secretary. It's reported that retired General Lloyd Austin is getting the nod.
Thank you very much, Simon. It's at 6:03. It is, of course, Tuesday, December 8th, 2020. The big story everywhere today is the beginning of the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech. We've been hearing a lot about that on this programme this afternoon. End is in sight as the UK vaccinations get underway. Massive propaganda coming from the UK's national and commercial media. We'll hear some more of it in a few moments. It goes from the sublime to the absolute ridiculous. Before we go there, though, let's have some Simple Minds. A bit of Jim Carr never did anybody any harm at all. I'm sexually aroused at the moment. I'm sexually aroused. There's a sight for you. I hope you're not eating anything. You don't want to be thinking of that. Sexually aroused. You'll know Laura Perrins. Laura is from Balbriggan in Dublin. She's from Balbriggan in Dublin. From Balbriggan. She founded the Conservative Woman. She's the co-founder, I should say, of the Conservative Woman. I think I'm sexually aroused. I like this tweet from Laura. Laura says, "Read my lips, fascists. I will not carry around a passport or papers or card to prove I'm clean. This is Britain, not North fucking Korea." Yes. And if I wasn't otherwise engaged, I might chance me arm there. Chance me arm. Laura Perrins. Love that. Do you want to giggle, do you? I mean, I use the term vaudeville a lot, maybe too much. But this is positively vaudevillian. Earlier this morning, as Nikki Campbell and Rachel Burden on BBC Radio 5 Live, which is broadcast from Media City in Salford, as they were rolling around on their backs, kicking their legs in the air, joyously singing about the fact that we're free because we have the new vaccine. And they were promoting it and they were saying how wonderful it is. And Nikki Campbell kept saying, today is V-Day. They went to the callers then, as they do at 9 a.m. One of the presenters pisses off home. The other one stays, they take it in turns, to field calls from the national audience. And this is mental. Will rang in. He has parents. His parents are alive. They are 98 years old, the parents. Both of them, mum and dad, are 98. Can you believe it? And they can't wait to have the vaccine.
What difference will it make to your life as a family?
It will mean that...
Listen, before we hear this, if my parents were 98, I'd be telling them to fuck off and die, you know? Will you just die? I'm getting too old to enjoy the inheritance. Just be done with it. You're 98, for fuck's sake. They want the vax.
What difference will it make to your life as a family?
None.
It will mean that they can get out and about more. It will mean we know that whatever we might be carrying around with us, we can't hurt them. And I think that's really important.
Whatever we might be carrying around with us, we can't hurt them. If they get the vaccine, my 99, he's nearly 99, the dad, the mum is 98 and a half. If they get the vaccine, I can't hurt them with my dirty germs.
That they can start to mix with the family again, or the family can mix with them, if you like, go and see them, and know that we can't actually be the ones that cause them to die. They've got this far. They are not ready to leave the planet yet, as my dad keeps telling me, and he would be really cross if it was something as silly as COVID-19 that finished them off.
I love that. We're not ready to leave the planet yet, son. Not ready to leave the planet. And I'll be properly pissed off if it's COVID that finishes me off. It was fantastic today, the media. It was fantastic. 12 minutes past six. Here's a little bit more of it. You are familiar, of course, with James O'Brien on LBC Radio. Aren't you? He had a caller on. The caller's name was AD. AD rang up. And they were discussing people needing to take the vaccine. How do we persuade people to take it? And why will some people not take it? This is just ordinary lad, AD, speaking to LBC's James O'Brien. Feast your ears.
Unless they can convince people, like say, I'm borderline, I'm probably 60-40 to going with the vaccine at the moment. But unless they can convince people like me, what you're going to have is, to get that herd immunity, the government is going to probably have to introduce some sort of passport, or they're going to have some sort of compulsory sort of thing to this. And the moment they do that, they play into the hands of the nutty conspiracy theorists.
What? Because the people saying who we're not addressing today, again, for the want of any confusion, we're not talking to people who think the Queen's a lizard, or that Bill Gates wants to inject them with a microchip that helps him control them or anything like that. But you think that issuing... Well, think of it just as a certificate to prove that you've had it.
Yeah.
The problem with nutty people is that everything they see is proof that they're right.
Yeah. When James O'Brien was born, the doctor didn't give his mother a slap. He knocked her out. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And everybody who challenges them is part of the proof that they're right, because we're all part of the conspiracy.
Exactly. I think I'm going to be perfectly honest. I'll be one of the last people to get it just because of the category that I'm in.
Oh, okay. In terms of your immune system.
So I've got no underlying health issues. I'm 43 years old, so I'm probably in tier like 10.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Yeah, well, at least we're now, and I know you were sort of here at the beginning of the conversation. I will get it. And you derive some comfort from the fact that you'll be among the last to get it. So if there is, and I don't take this the wrong way, AD, but if it wasn't for this chatter, this background chatter, which does contain a lot of nonsense and a lot of very dangerous nonsense, do you think you would still be where? I know you're a million miles away from that background chatter, but it's still behind you. It's still in the background. Do you think that has sort of, by a process almost of intellectual osmosis, has that invaded your mind?
If social media didn't exist, yes, I probably would have no doubts whatsoever that this vaccine was 100% safe on the way forward.
Right. Who do you follow on social media that's got the most followers? How many people do you know personally that have got 750,000 followers?
Not that many.
Well, no, me. Just me, then. Yeah. Just me, is it? Yeah.
Just yourself.
Right, James, listen to me. Thanks. Twitter is not real life. Most of social media is nonsense. Rely on the things you would have relied on before social media existed and get the bloody jab.
What?
Get the bloody jab.
Yeah, get the bloody jab.
Get the bloody jab.
The media in total lockstep. What have we heard today? On this programme alone, we've heard from BBC Radio 2, BBC Radio 5 Live, we've heard from Sky News, BBC News 24, we've heard from Talk Radio, we've heard from LBC Radio, all national stations. Get the bloody jab. Get the bloody jab. And then this afternoon, I heard a fairly extraordinary conversation between Vaughan Gething. Do you know who Vaughan Gething is? You don't. He's Wales's health minister. And he's an arsehole. Massive chip on his shoulder. When you see him and hear him being interviewed, you will know what I mean. He's militant. Very militant, this guy. This Vaughan Gething. Not much of a personality. He was on Sky News today with Jane Secker. The insanity of these morons.
Indeed. This is obviously welcome news because the numbers are still going up, aren't they, in parts of Wales. Why do you think this is?
Well, our firebreak worked in that it reduced cases significantly, and cases kept on falling for a period of time after the firebreak. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to shift out of a new way of living together to keep each other safe. So we've essentially gone back to what we...
Yeah, I'm sorry to do this. I didn't have time. I was so pushed for time today to break this up into segments. But I want to focus on a couple of things he says when he says them. She's saying, you know, things are getting worse in Wales.
But unfortunately, we haven't been able to shift out of a new way of living together to keep each other safe.
We haven't been able to shift out of a new way of living together to keep each other safe. These people are fucking insane, aren't they?
So we've essentially gone back to what was happening in October before the fire rate, with cases going up. That's why we've had to introduce further restrictions on hospitality.
Which are destroying businesses, ruining people's lives, and rendering people not only unemployed, but unemployable. There isn't anything for these people to do outside of hospitality.
Great pain and great cost to the hospitality sector. Despite the £340 million package we're providing to support businesses, we know it's going to be very, very hard for them. The alternative, though, is doing nothing and seeing more people become seriously unwell. And that just isn't acceptable. So the last 2 days' figures reinforce why we took those measures last week. And it's about all of us. The government has responsibility. Our NHS is living up to its responsibilities, as we see today, both in the vaccinations being delivered, but also all those people being cared for in an NHS bed. It's up to all of us in the choices we make about how we live our lives to take care of ourselves and each other, to make sure we don't have lots of contact with lots of different people, to see fewer people, spend less time with them, and each play our part to help keep Wales safe.
It's just unimaginable, that, isn't it? Or at least it was unimaginable that you would hear a politician not just say this stuff, but get away with it.
To take care of ourselves and each other, to make sure we don't have lots of contact with lots of different people, to see fewer people, spend less time with them, and each play our part to help keep Wales safe.
See fewer people, spend less time with them. These are our responsibilities. Wow. What does she say?
But doesn't it show that the firebreak lockdown didn't work if the numbers went up afterwards? Or was it the messaging wasn't working afterwards? Because there have been lots of other parts of the UK that have had restrictions and come out of them and the numbers haven't shot up.
Yeah, I saw Matt Hancock in the House of Commons talking with some concern about some tier two areas of England where they're seeing a rising tide. And the reason why we've taken the measures we have done in hospitality here in Wales is the evidence from SAGE and our own Welsh version of SAGE, the Technical Advisory Group, advise us that the tier three equivalent measures of England and Scotland appear to be effective in holding and then reducing the growth of coronavirus. That's why we've moved to those extra restrictions. And the challenge for all of us here, can we live in a different way for another number of months until we get more vaccines available? Because the hope is arriving, the reality of that significant change for all of us. And if we can all do the right thing for months more, then more of us will be here for the future.
Wow. Do the right thing. Live an unbearable life for a virus that most people will never get. And most of them who do get it will never know they had it. And the ones who do get it, only a fraction of those will be ill enough to have to go to bed for a few days. And of those who are ill enough to go to bed for a few days, only a tiny, tiny percentage of those will need to go to hospital. And of the tiny number that needs to go to hospital, out of that number, a tiny number again, almost immeasurable, it's so small, will need to be ventilated. And of those who do, again, only a small number of those will die. 99.7% of people who get this flu, because that's what it is. It's a respiratory infection. It's the flu. It's the flu. It's a very bad flu season. It's similar to the 2014-2015 flu season. That's what it is. They know it. And they're using it. And they knew it was coming to transform the way we live our lives forever. And they're getting away with it. Because the last line of defence is Jane Secker there on Sky News, is Jeremy Vine on BBC Radio 2, is Laura Kunzberg at the BBC, Robert Peston on ITV, and these people have forsaken the reasons, if they ever had reasons, for getting into journalism in the first place. And that was basically to challenge, to hold a microscope up to public officials, the police, the government, the NHS, and expose them when they're lying and stealing and conniving. But they're not asleep on their watch. Worse than that, they're actively working as, I don't know, some sort of comical allies for the government in this country, telling you day in, day out, this is good, it's the right thing to do. Sacrifice your liberty, sacrifice your job, sacrifice your children's lives, your grandchildren's futures, for the greatest lie, one of the greatest lies. One of the greatest lies ever told. Certainly the greatest lie ever told in my lifetime. I put it beyond September the 11th. I put it beyond any of that. You can't find anybody. Nobody knows anybody who's become seriously ill with coronavirus. Nobody. I'm sick and tired of canvassing people. In my city of Salford, complete strangers, starting conversations. You know anybody who was seriously ill? Nah. Once in a blue moon, yeah, my sister had it. Was she okay? Yeah, she was in bed for a few days. She was all right then. But was anybody seriously ill? Nah. Nobody knows anybody who is seriously ill with coronavirus. The hospitals are no busier now on December 8th than they were on December 8th, 2019, 18, 17, 16 or 15. And they're talking about giving vaccines to 99-year-old fucking people to protect them against what? Their immune systems got them to 98. Let them be. They're doing all right if you reach 98 years of age, huh? It's astounding, this, isn't it? It's astounding to me. And here we are, rolling out a vaccine that they put together, threw together in a matter of months, that's still in trials. This thing is still in trial. The trials are going on until 2022. It's been given an emergency license. I said today on social media, and I meant it, it's going to the lengths of, it's almost playing Russian roulette if you're NHS surgery. Phones you up and says, come and have the first of these two doses, or come and get the one-off Oxford-AstraZeneca shot. It's playing Russian roulette because the people who made those vaccines, they haven't a clue as to what the long-term effects of taking those vaccines are. They haven't a fucking clue. So why would you do it? Why the demand for people to take a vaccine? Why threaten people with passports? Passport for pleasure. Passport to the football match. Passport to go back to work. Why? For a virus that hardly impacts anybody. Even if you're over 80 and you've been unwell, you're still not likely to die from coronavirus. So why? 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 But the last line of defence is the media. And we're back to this again. Back to where I began when I began presenting independent radio shows. Back when I began presenting independent radio shows, I began by dissecting the media, by analysing the media. It's the media, the media, the media, the media. That's how it works. Reserve the lion's share of your wrath for the UK's media. It's the media. The brainwashing, why do people go along with it? Why are people queuing up to get the vaccine? It's the media. And I won't finish up today without mentioning this, because it means a lot to so many people. It doesn't mean a lot to me, really. I've never been a huge fan of John Lennon or the Beatles. I like the Beatles' music more now than I did when, I suppose, I did 5 years ago or 10 years ago. But I've never been a huge fan of the Beatles or John Lennon. But I'm in the minority, obviously. And it's 40 years to the day that John Lennon was shot dead by a Manchurian candidate called Mark Chapman. It's got to be what happened. From what I can tell over the years, looking at documentaries, reading books, Jean-Anne Crowley, my unbelievably talented friend, was in Highbury, would you believe, in London, writing a long profile of the Beatles, part of a 60s series even, for the Irish Times. There were no mobile phones, of course, in 1980. No 24-hour television. So Jean-Anne had started her piece with Paul McCartney's recent arrest in Japan for having a little bit of ganja in his luggage. All going well, the article was, until Alan came home from the Groniad with the very sorry news. 40 years ago, John Lennon. Means a lot to a lot of people. A lot of people believe John Lennon was very important in fighting this agenda, in at least presenting some opposition to this agenda. So we'll go out of the programme today with this from the Beatles. I could have played Woman, I could have played Imagine. I'll play this from the Beatles. We'll close it out. I'm back with you tomorrow, Wednesday, of course, at 5 o'clock UK time with Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Thanks for spending your afternoon or some of your afternoon with me today. I really appreciate it and you. Until tomorrow then.